As you all know, we've made a trade with the Los Angeles Kings, sending Kevin Fiala their way and receiving a first-round pick in 2022 and the rights to the University of Minnesota defenseman Brock Faber.
Holdy, back to Fiala. Fiala drives in on the backhand. He scores! Holdy to Fiala one more time.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Five Hole Fantasy Hockey Podcast. I'm your host today, TJ Branson. And I got two other hosts today, too. I don't know why I said I'm your host today, but, you know, I got three hosts, Raj and Zach are here.
Hey.
That's true. Hey.
I'm not going to re-record that, so we're just going to onward. We got the Dynasty mailbag today. We got the full top line in the house. So this is going to be the last episode of the Dynasty series. We'll break into some other off-season content next week. If you guys want to find us, we're on Twitter at FHF Hockey. We are in the Fantasy Hockey Discord. If maybe you didn't know about the Dynasty mailbag and you're listening to this and you want to get something in, just chirp us in the Discord, whatever. First and foremost, today is Kevin Fiala trade day. So we're going to talk about that right off the top, and then we're going to get into some Dynasty questions that were submitted to us through the Discord, through Twitter. Boys, Kevin Fiala to Los Angeles for Brock Faber and the 19th overall pick in the 2022 draft. Minnesota now has 19 and 24. Prime position to move up or just stand pat because this class is strange. Fiala gets 7 years at 7.9. What do we think right off the top?
I love it for every side.
Yeah.
I like it for L.A. It's like picking Kevin Fiala with your first round draft pick. I see that as a win. They're a team that played a lot better than I fucking thought they were going to in the playoffs. Like, I thought that they were just going to be an easy out. Adding someone like Kevin Fiala, who's a quick player, and that's what they're trying to play faster. And they were doing it against a team like Edmonton and actually holding their own. So I like it for that. And then also Minnesota getting an extra first round draft pick, that's big. And it's a deep draft, so I like that end round of the draft. I feel like you're getting a middle rounder at the end of the first round.
Roger, your take, bud?
Yeah, I agree. I think it was a bit of a win-win. Fiala is, like, so great, you know, eye test for days, right? Like, he's so awesome. He just never seemed to put it together for a whole season. He just didn't quite fit. So I think it's going to be a good move. Yeah, he was being a little underutilized at times, right? Yeah. And just because he wasn't clicking, and it seemed like... Hate to use the cliche, but the fresh start situation might actually happen here. He's going out to L.A. You know, I think it's going to be good for him, and I think Minnesota is going to be better off, actually.
Yeah, it's not like they could afford him anyway. Like, they're just starting the cap hell that Zach Parise and Ryan Suter buyouts have created. So, you know, it's not like they could have him anyway, and they get a first-round pick. They get Brock Faber out of it, too. Man, what do you guys think about Fiala? Like, you know, Raj, you were just talking about deployment. Where do you got him? In L.A.?
Well, I mean, that's the weird thing about L.A. is you still got Kopitar, who's just old as hell, but he's still essentially the same player he's always been.
Still performing.
I know. He is what he is, but I think Fiala is going to get every opportunity. Like, I think L.A. is picturing him as being underutilized to this point, and they want to bring him in and go, we think we see something in this guy, which everybody has for years, right? I mean... You were the guy who drafted him higher than anybody in the offseason, and he outperformed that this season even. So,
oh, was I the one that took him at the top part of the range there?
You took him at 60th overall, and he ended up being 50th overall, actually. Hmm. And the ADP was basically 100. It was like 97.6, I think.
Yeah, it's not often you reach and then still get a return.
I think they're going to give him every shot to perform, and I really feel like he's a bit of a chip on the shoulder kind of guy, and he's actually going to probably have a career year.
Left wing depth isn't that hot here. I mean, you got Trevor Moore, you got Alex Ifalo, and Brendan Lemieux. Zach, where do you got him lining up?
Well, he's going to be on that first or second line for sure.
I think so, too.
I mean, Brendan Lemieux isn't exactly he's not a top six guy. As much as I like Brendan Lemieux and it's just in-your-face style of play, he's not a top six guy. So I think it's easy to slot him into one of those top six spots on either side. Likely, what are you thinking, next to Philip Deneau?
No, I think the Moore, Deneau, Arvidsson line was... solid. So I'm pegging Fiala on the top line. So right there in that top six, like you're saying, it's Fiala, Kopitar, Kempe. That's your top line. Iafallo was kind of miscast as a top line left wing. Mm-hmm. So him with Byfield and Kaliev, I think is solidifies your third line. Power play, I think Fiala gets top power play there. Deneau maybe moves down. He's taking faceoffs on the second unit. You know, Kaliev is going to hopefully stay on that top line. Los Angeles, fifth in the league in shots per game, adds a volume shooter like Fiala. This is going to be, I mean, it's going to be a Tommy gun every night, the LA Kings. It's going to be fun to watch them next year, man. What are we thinking about Kevin Fiala's totals? I think it was a 75-point pace this year. I'm going to have to double-check that while you guys are on about it. But, okay, so he averaged 12 minutes, 30 seconds of 5-on-5 time. You look at Kopitar, Iafallo, and Kempe, they average 13 minutes. So if we're using that as kind of a benchmark, he gets an extra minute of even strength time on ice. And he's looking at maybe, you know, if he does get the top unit, 30 to 40 seconds more. We're looking at like 2 minutes more for Kevin Fiala, which is going to be huge. Line mates are going to go up. I know people out there are like, no, like Kaprizov's so good. Fiala played 6% of his 5-on-5 minutes with less than 6% with Kaprizov. So I think it's objectively an upgrade for him. I'm going to look up his point pace last year, but I want to hear, you know, what do you guys think a year looks like for Fiala? It's early in the offseason. He's got a full summer to like move in, get used to it, you know, learn the grounds, that kind of thing, like the LA campus. You know what I'm saying? Like he's gonna be assimilated and have full training camp, like all that stuff. It's not to be understated. So I want to know what you guys think about Fiala next year.
Like I said, I think he's gonna be given every opportunity. As far as totals go, I mean, I don't think point per game is a stretch, to be honest.
I just looked it up. 85 points this year. So he was over a point per game in Minnesota. Over under what he did this year, 85.
I think that's probably about right. I didn't realize he got that many this year. I knew he had definitely had a super hot ending, as he always does. I didn't know he reached that amount of points. But yeah, I think 85 is probably in the range. I was saying about point per game. So I'd say 82 to 85 is bang on.
56 points in his last 44 games. Kevin Fiala, yeah. Second half player, no doubt about it. Zach, what's your opinion on what a year looks like for him? 85 points over under.
Under.
Ooh, I hate that. Why?
I'll take the under. I'll be the non-believer here. For me, that's because I like Minnesota's offense. He's going from an offense like Minnesota, who, you know, was top five in goals for per game this year. And that wasn't Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Los Angeles was in the bottom half of the league for that. So he's going from a much better offense to a lesser offense, we'll just say. It's not that they're horrible. They're not dead last. But like when I say bottom half, they're like the high teens, early 20s kind of ranking for just scoring offense. That's going to hurt him a little bit. You have to admit that. Like they are just a deeper team, Minnesota is. So they're getting scoring and production all around. So the line mates are going to make a difference. I get it that he's going to that. He's probably going to be on that top line. But that top six in Minnesota was no joke.
Strange how it worked. I got him for, I like 85 points. That was a really tough line. I thought he had 75 this year. But, man, 85 points, that's a jump from 69 2 years ago, 66 last year in terms of point pace. 85 this year. Great year for him to go get a contract. It sucks, but like I could buy the under, I could buy the over, I could buy the push. I think it's going to be 85 plus or minus 5. So sorry guys, but you know, I could see him landing anywhere. All right, let's talk about Minnesota here. There's going to be a middle six wing spot open. The Wild have a ton in the pipeline. We're going to see Boldy. We're going to see Rossi. Those guys are all but locks to play. Boldy plays the wing.
Rossi's a center though.
Rossi's a center, but Boldy can play wing. If I'm spoiling the rest here, I think it's going to be Boldy, but they've got guys. Adam Beckman's the left wing. They've got a ton of centers in the pipeline. Kushnadinov, Kovnov, Dewar, Hentej. I don't know how to say his. Hentejes, maybe. McBain. Ton of options that they could move to the wing. They're not going to be shopping on the free agent market just because of how tight they are about to be against the cap. So it's going to be an in-house replacement or a hockey trade. Those are their only options to fill this. And for me, it's Boldy. It's got to be Boldy.
I don't think that's new. I don't think that's new news. If Boldy wasn't there next year, it would be a big what the fuck moment. Really, I think it's Rossi that's going to, you know, get the time up that he did not get last year.
True enough.
That's why Rossi is like a Calder Cup hopeful.
I hope so too, man. I think this opens the door for Adam Beckman as, you know, that left wing depth chart opens.
I want to see a line that has Rossi, Boldy, and Freddie Goudreau so fucking bad.
That'd be tight. That'd be tight. If they move Goudreau to wing, yeah, I think that, yeah, that could be easy. That's Rossi moving in and the wing spot short up. So it's going to be a big year for Boldy, man. Like, I had Boldy here later because there are a bunch of, you know, questions like potential 22 and under players. Boldy had a 68-point pace in his rookie season.
Boldy's my answer for that question.
Boldy's going to be good. Raj, anything else to add on this Fiala the trade here?
No, I think we covered it pretty well. I think a good all-around trade for both sides.
Yes, sir. All right, Dynasty Mailbag. It's from Jaegerbomb Steve. He says, ask Raj how he feels about trading the third overall this year.
Great. Yeah, I feel great about it.
I think you traded it 2 years ago. I tried to find this trade.
It's a little difficult on Fantrax, but I managed to go back and I used that trade to to get Tolvanen. So I upgraded a pick to get Tolvanen in the entry draft when the league started. So it was the start of one of our dynasties. So in the end, what ended up happening is I basically ended up trading two firsts for Matt Barzal to you.
Yeah, you did. Yep.
So you ended up with that Tolvanen as well as another first, and I think maybe a second or something.
Broberg. Oh, by the way, Zach, we traded Matt Barzal. So we're in full rebuild. We already traded Draisaitl, so like we're rebuilding.
It's fine. That's fine with me.
We traded with Raj.
So I'm happy with that. Good chance Tolvanen still becomes a good player. There's a definite chance Barzal, even on a down year, is a great player still. So yeah, it worked out.
He's one of the bounce back candidates that I'm sure we'll talk about later in the offseason. Yeah. But I like what his year is going to look like. So well done. That was a good trade. Yeah. Second question here. In fantasy rookie drafts, specifically this one, what order would you pick players in? Up to 10 if possible, but at least the top five. Now, I picked 9th in our draft, so I did not rank up to 10 just because I don't want all my cards on the table. Being the only guy that has a fantasy hockey podcast in that league that is going to announce in public my rankings. I went up to 6, you know, talking to all these dynasty experts and prospect guys over the last 3 weeks. I got Wright, I got Cooley, I got Slavkovsky, Nazar, Juracek, and Nemec. And yes, I do like Juracek better than Nemec. That's my top 6.
Well, you know me, I've traded all my picks for the next 4 years.
Always win now.
Yeah, I'm usually like mediocre now, lower than mediocre later. That's my strategy.
I mean, you're a Canucks fan, so.
Exactly, right?
It makes sense.
I don't know anything secret to break away from any of the normal lists. I mean, I got most of my info on these picks from the last 4 episodes listening to you and and all the different guests. So I defer to you guys on that question for sure.
Zachary?
You know, I would put Gauthier probably up in that top 5 if it were me. I would think about Savoie. But I mean, other than that, I mean, I think you're spot on. I will say this. Gagafurkas, he's been rising up the board. He's top 15 now. He's just outside the top 10. And, you know, back when I really started looking into him, he was like out of the first round. I like the way he plays. Oh, and Mentukov is probably, you named a couple. I'd like your D-man. Mentukov is probably my third D-man. So that's me.
Big guy, yeah.
And Connor Geeky.
Next question here comes from Caleb. He's asking, who are some potential 22 and under players who are having excellent underlying numbers but were lacking proper deployment? You know, who could get it this year? Players like Newhook or Podkolzin, for example. And I think, you know, before we get into this one, a lot's going to play into it. So guys like Newhook, you know, if Kadri's out, man, like, look for Newhook. Absolutely. You know, now might be the time to buy him.
Kadri's going to be on another team.
You know, maybe he takes a hometown discount, but the guy, I think he's like, you know, he's on the other side of 30, so he probably wants money. He probably wants term, and, you know, he's going to ride off into the sunset, man. Like, he just won a Stanley Cup. He wants to get paid. I wouldn't blame him, but, you know, if he does take a hometown discount, then maybe Newhook is your 3C. And if term is coming along with it, I don't know. Now is a good time to buy Newhook, but, you know, I had a I had a bunch of guys here under 22. I'll kick this one off. I mean, Oliver Wahlstrom just jumps off the page. Great underlying stats. He led the team in shots on goal per 60 and rush attempts. He was second behind Kiefer Bellows in scoring chance generation. There's a ton of room to improve his time on ice. Trotz only gave him 12 minutes. I don't know what Lane Lambert's going to do, but you know, if anybody's got opportunity, it's going to be this guy, Oliver Wahlstrom. In our 10 lessons, I talked about having great underlying stats, but not the time on ice. This could be the offseason where that changes for Oliver Wahlstrom. So I think we're going to see what Oliver Wahlstrom's got this year. There's also a trade deadline that could change things. Josh Anderson has been rumored to be going there, and that would block him from a top six wing spot, or it could. I like Arthur Kaliev, second on the team for shots on goal per 60. Really good on the power play. He had, I think it was like 60% the amount of minutes that Kopitar and Kempe had, but he had the same amount of power play goals. Matt Boldy, we talked about him already. Evan Bouchard, Evan Bouchard ended the year as QB1. Barry underwhelmed on the power play in the playoffs. I think Bouchard is ready. There's part of me that thinks, like, just go with the safe thing. It's the beginning of the year. Just plop Barry out there. But Barry is on, you know, the trade bait board, so things could easily change. But Evan Bouchard, somebody I'd look at. I love my guy, Marty Fevs. He just bangs. If you're in a banger league, Marty Fevs is that guy. Cole Sillinger played really well. Winnipeg kind of blowing up. I could see him, you know, getting pushed into the light. Like, he could be a spotlight player for them, you know, going forward. PLD on the trade block, apparently. And then I got Nicholas Robertson here to close it out, because I think if Mishiev is out, if he wants $6 million and Toronto can't afford him, Nick Robertson's going up there, and he's going to have an opportunity to shine.
I have a couple of guys that I wanted to throw in there that you didn't add in. I love Seth Jarvis. I think he's going to be staple to that top line. He's likely going to be playing with Aho, and I see Aho, you know, even playing a bigger part, because in my eyes, he was a little wishy-washy this year, and he didn't step into that leadership role. I think he's going to take that next step next year, and Seth Jarvis is going to be a big proponent of that. And then the New Jersey Devils. I got Dawson Mercer. You know, he's going to take a step up. That top six is looking fantastic in New Jersey. And just think about the jump that Jack Hughes made from that first year to that next year, you know, from going from 20 years old to 21 years old, like Jack Hughes did, like Dawson Mercer is about to do. I think you're going to see that jump from him too. Jack Hughes straight flip-flopped. He went from being, you know, 20 points under a point per game to 20 points over a point per game kind of shit. So I'd like Jack Hughes to continue the breakout. He's only 21. And then Dawson Mercer, who's only 20.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, especially when JT Miller gets there, the guys on Jersey are going to blow up.
I do think I got New Jersey making big moves. Yeah.
They're going to be serious this year. Man, do they need a fucking goalie? How about it, huh? It's still going to be their downfall. It's still going to be their downfall, the fucking shit-ass goalies they got.
I don't think there's going to be a ton of wins, but them and Detroit are two of my favorite teams, actually, which is just bizarre to be saying out loud. A couple other guys that we didn't bring up, I mean, Lafreniere is still 22, so this is the time a guy like him is going to start getting better. He did make some big strides this year in his overall play, and you could see the team was getting a little more trustworthy with him. I think he's going to make a big points jump this year. And the question, the person mentioned Pod Colson, which is, you know, you mentioned Pod Colson around a Canucks fan, and you can sit down for about half an hour. He's about 21, 22, just turning 22. Towards the end of the season, he got a big bump at about April 7th. Till the end of the season, he went up to 16 minutes a game, and he was almost point per game once he got the proper deployment and playing alongside PD and got some decent minutes. Not power play points either, like just good 5-on-5. Proper deployment was all he needed. So keep an eye on him if you can get him late, but you know what it's like trying to draft anyone from the Canucks. If there's anyone from Vancouver, you're not getting, he's probably going to go in the third round.
Yeah.
No, I actually don't know what that's like, because in every draft that I'm in, there's always multiple Canucks fans that just draft all of the Canucks players. So I actually don't know what it's like to draft Canucks players.
That's legitimate to watch, like with Vancouver, Toronto, sometimes the Rangers, but definitely Toronto and Vancouver. Like, everyone's overvalued just because there's so many hockey freaks there.
Next question is for us Philly guys. Okay, I think this was Purple Puddin on Discord. He asks, I actually like Torts as a coach. Can you guys see any situation where he falls in love with certain young guys in the system, maybe some under the radar guys? I'm going to kick it off here. I I am a strong believer in coaches play with what they're handed. You know, you don't try and shoehorn a square peg in a round hole if that's not what you have. And I think Torts is going to come into this knowing that there's a youth movement on the way. You know, you got guys that need time. There's not heavy expectations. I think Noah Cates is going to be somebody to look at. You know, Bobby Brink is somebody I'm really excited to see get an extended look. I think Cam York could make a push for power play one just based on the fact that we have nobody else. It's not Provorov. You know, we've been fucking around with that for years, and it's just not working. You know, Ryan Ellis could be back, but history has taught us that he won't be back. So there's a good chance that Cam York could get a real look. I think we have to reevaluate Morgan Frost and what his ceiling is. I don't think, you know, his draft year.
I think they should go get Tony D'Angelo.
I don't know. We don't have much money to play with this offseason. It's going to be boring. It's going to be shitty. Maybe we're going to trade Provorov. It's going to be a weird one. But, you know,
I don't think Carolina's going to keep him.
That was a 1 year, wasn't it? Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Maybe. I think he stays.
I think it's going to work out better than people are thinking. People love to hate Torts. And it's so easy. It's just like that's the easiest thing to do.
And I'm one.
Hate on him. I mean, I'm a fucking Canucks fan. He was the worst coach in the history of the Canucks, and basically
you had him for a year.
He's a great coach. He was absolutely wrong for Vancouver. He really excels. Like if you look at when he won the Cup, he had a bunch of like a young LeCavalier and young guys. And he just drove them properly. He's usually a great coach for 1 or 2 years and then people tune him out. And Philly needs some sort of direction, right? Like they had just all gone their separate ways long ago at this point. So even if it's we all hate the coach, at least there's something to rally behind there. And Tortorella is not a dinosaur in terms of coaching. He's a dinosaur when you hear him on the mic. You know, he gets himself in trouble with his words a lot. But as a coach, he's not actually that old school as people think. I mean, he's not a new all data guy, but he's definitely not. He doesn't throw that stuff away. I think what you're going to see is he's going to love a Konechny. He already loves Atkinson. Atkinson had his best season under Torts. As far as I'd heard, Atkinson was one of the guys, you know, like, yeah, let's get Torts. So I think you'll see an uptick in those couple of guys. And I mean, can you not see like Torts just deploying the shit out of a guy like Risto and just saying, go get 400 hits this year? So I think it turns a fantasy. You might get a little bit more of the grit and a bit of the scoring out of the guys that are going to appreciate Torts' style. As far as like the question was a lot about the young guys. They're going to have to be tough, I think. But if they are, I think it's going to be a big benefit, actually.
Yeah, something about Ristolainen and John Tortorella's reputation for a defensive coach doesn't jive with me. But I could see him going out there and be like, this is what you do. Just like how, you know, in Rick and Morty, when Rick talks to that fucking robot, like, what is my purpose? Your purpose is to go hit people. and that's it. That's, you know, 400 hits could be what he does this year. Yeah.
I serve butter.
Just butter.
He's out there serving butter.
Next question is, should you hoard goalies in large leagues hoping that one will become a full NHL player?
Yes. It's a double-edged sword, though.
That's exactly what I had here.
It's a double-edged sword. I mean, you know that there's people that do it, but like you got to be. It's just like anything else. You got to be good at it, or else it's gonna be a hindrance to your own team.
That's what I had.
You don't want to be throwing away the rest of your team to end up with hopefully one good goalie. I mean, the best you can even hope for is to have two good goalies. So if you're risking more sure things at other positions, I wouldn't go too far in that direction. I mean, after we spent the whole year talking about how volatile goalies are, like Zach said, you better know what you're doing if you're going to do it. I wouldn't wander willy-nilly into an all-G strategy.
All prospects are lottery tickets at this point. And adding on to what you're saying about goalies kind of being the riskiest lottery ticket that there is, you got to be cautious of how many you have. Like, say you have 25 minors. It's not like you're going to have 12 goalies. So you got to be smart about it. You got to trim the fat if there's guys, you know, that just straight up have the remotest of a remote chance. Nobody's going to trade you for them just because they're a goalie. You're holding on to these guys based on a 1.00 chance or 0.1 chance that they're going to be an NHL starter someday. So I don't know. I think it's important to have your finger on the pulse of what's going on in the, you know, the AHL. You know, I heard about Michael DiPietro today. Apparently he might go to Montreal. You know, I think in the Canucks, they have had a changing of the guard. I don't think DiPietro is number two in the depth chart anymore. So DiPietro, who was the guy, you know, then Demko came out. So like things happen with goalies, man. Like look at what's going on in Buffalo too. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen was the guy, but now it's looking more and more like possibly it's Devon Levi. It could be Eric Portillo. Things happen year over year. Friggin' Kähkönen, man. Kähkönen was the guy, and then they drafted Wallstedt. Things like that is going to happen. Don't tie up too much of your roster with things that can change year over year, especially when you're waiting for goalies to turn 25 when they're going to jump in the league. Like if you pick them up when they're 18, that's 7 years. Number one, that you have to wait, like even if they do pan out. And two, that's 7 years, year over year, that you're hoping that they stay at the top of the depth chart. So I don't know. Like if you think you can move some of these guys, absolutely do it. But I think, you know, number one, they're volatile with their performances. They're also volatile on the depth chart, too.
The only thing you have going for, the only thing you have going for you in that situation is a player like Kähkönen. He's an NHL goalie no matter what. He's going to end up on another team like he did, and he will play in the NHL. So a NHL caliber goalie is always going to be, you know, someone worth having around at some point in time, though, too.
There was the Edmonton goalie that just said, fuck it, and went back to Russia. Ilya Konovalov, like, he just bounced. He was top of their depth chart, and then he just left. Things are going to happen.
Maximum 64 goalie jobs in the league, realistically. 64. How many goalies retire each year? So, I mean, there's just not that. And teams are way more apt to gamble on a young forward and get put them in for 10 games rather than throw a goalie prospect in for 10 games, you know, unless it's a real high-end prospect, in which case you're there's no gamble. That's not the kind of player we're talking about. So I'd be way more into gambling on forwards. Just the odds are just so much in your favor.
Next question, before I even ask it.
I love this next question, actually. So I feel like this next question, this is the first time TJ's ever going to give a one-word answer, and that's just going to be the answer.
And I think we're all going to agree, too. Should you give away late-round picks to add value in trades because the chances of them becoming a full-time NHL player are low?
Yes.
Yes. I'm a huge fan of this. I think, you know.
He loves it.
Number one.
Yeah, they were shit to TJ.
I didn't care. They were the first things to go. I don't want to clog up my minors. You know, there's a limited number of minors that you can have.
You want a 6th round pick?
What am I going to do? I'm going to, 5th round pick, and I'm going to drop him next year to make room for my next 5th round pick? No. If somebody values it more than I do, and that's the thing that puts the trade over the edge, yes, I will happily give you my 2024 4th round pick and not think about it again, ever again. So, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
100%.
There's those friggin' nerds out there that, like, we got this one guy, and he's a dork. I already kind of fucking called him out for it, but his team is the most stacked team of prospects that I've ever seen in my life. But I think next year, he's going to trade some of those guys that graduate for better prospects, and he's going to, every year, have the best team of prospects, and he will never win a championship. He will just always have the best prospects in the league. And there's people out there that do this. So yeah, they want your 2024 4th round picks. Sell them to those guys.
Absolutely.
The guys that just want prospects and that will never, ever, ever compete because all they want is prospects. I'm looking at you. You know who you are. I don't know his real name, but it's NWO. And I mean, his team is fucking stacked top to bottom, but he's hard on for prospects. And if you want to sell prospects, he's the guy to go to. But he doesn't have any win now pieces to sell, so he's just kind of stagnant. He's just moving prospects around.
I was talking about human person.
Humper's team, man, is a masterclass in how you should do Dynasty. And I'd love to have him on the show, but I know, you know, he's probably got to charge his battery for 2 days to do an hour-long episode.
He has every good rookie from this year and last year on one of his team.
Dude, his team is unstoppable. Like, I think he was he made it to the quarterfinals this year too.
Yeah.
Like he's got a good compete now team. He tore it down after the initial draft, got all the prospects. He was what NWO could do in WAMP. sell for win now pieces, compete, and still have like the best that, like, he's got Sider, Jack Hughes, Humphers, man. Great fucking team.
He drafted Sider.
He did, yeah.
Good on him.
All right, that was an easy question. The next one. The hardest part of Dynasty for me is evaluating trades where one side has established stars and the other side has picks and prospects. Do you guys have any tips or guidelines you use for this situation? Right off the bat, I think this is an ideal situation. One team is building, one team is win now. This is a rare occasion where the window for everybody winning a trade is huge. I think everybody can win a trade because if you're competing and you sell prospects to the guy that's building and he sells you a win now piece, everybody's happy. And I think that's it's a perfect fit. Determining team needs for your trade partner, I think is the biggest context that you could take going into a trade, knowing what they need. You know, you can throw something out there that's fair, or that might even be a slight overpay when you look at the raw value of the players, but it's going to be shot down because maybe he doesn't need a defenseman. You know, maybe he doesn't need somebody, you know, that's in your trade. So I think opening up a line of communication, DMing the guy, finding out what they need, that's huge. And that's how you kind of evaluate and find a good middle ground.
Absolutely. And like, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right? Like, if you want to change it into like Trailer Park Boys terms,
one man's garbage, another man person's good on garbage. And I'm going to roll with that.
And that's absolutely true in a trade. Like, on one of my teams right now, I'm super stoked to have JT Miller because I've got a team that's really good right now. A lot of good 25 to 27-year-olds. He fits right in. But on another team, I'm trying to rebuild, and JT Miller being 27, turning 28, and pretty hot topic right now, and he's fucking great, I'm thinking of moving him. Because that's a value piece I can build.
You can get something real good for him.
Yeah, and I mean, he's one of my favorite players, and I'm like literally today thinking about doing both things with the same player just based on the team I'm working with. So that's the most important thing, is you really got to evaluate direction and try to find somebody who's going in the opposite direction, like you were saying, right?
Yeah, that somebody that doesn't need those rebuilding pieces can give them to you, can benefit you, and you can give them a win-now piece that benefits them. It's a perfect situation for a win-win. All right, next question. I think this is going to be an easy one too. Is it collusion if you say, I'll give you this in one league if you give me that in another league, as long as both trades are still pretty fair to both sides? Yes.
Yes.
That's collusion.
Yes.
Yes, that's like the definition. So don't do that. Okay, how do you guys decide between quality and quantity when it comes to swing games? Players that are, you know, minor eligible but are playing in the NHL basically gives you an extra bench spot. Would you rather have one guy that gets you 2 to 3 points per game compared to two guys that are getting 1 to 2? Maybe a bad example, but would love to hear your guys' take on the whole quantity versus quality at the bottom end of your roster when competing.
I am personally all about quality. I want my top level to be high quality, and I want my mid-level to be quality too, because I can find those pieces in pickups and stuff like that. So I'm all about quality, not quantity. I don't want to just a bunch of decent players. You're going to make it to the playoffs with a bunch of decent players, but then, you know, have a whole bunch of mid-level guys that are going to turn off at any given time. So quality, 100% for me.
It really comes down to the league rules. I mean, we're specifically talking about dynasties, so you're usually not making tons of moves, like as compared to a redraft league, you know, you're not on the wire as much. But I still think that it's nice to have that one or two positions where it is a quantity position. Like, I want to have my streamer spot full every night. And if that's coming from the minors and or even swapping guys out, depending on the depth of the dynasty, if it's a full dynasty, you're not really swapping guys in and out, but trying to have a few guys with that minor eligibility. But, you know, you do have to draw the line. It's not all about games played. I'd rather, especially with those fringe players, I mean, the reason they're fringe players is they're not great players. So trying to have that spot filled every night is the most important thing, however you're going to do it.
I think my take is it's important to have both. I think those quality players Zach's talking about, you know, maybe you drafted and you've cultivated, you've brought them to fruition. Those are your quality guys, the guys you hung on to, the Kaliyevs, the Boldies, you know, guys that are paying dividends. But to have those depth pieces still switching in. Like I had a guy, Nico Sturm, right? So he's playing fourth line minutes, but he's just getting stats on a night. I think it's important to have those guys too, but you're not filling up your roster with swing players. You know, the more you have, the better, obviously, because it extends your bench a little bit. But I think, you know, if you divide up your minors into thirds, if you have a 25 player minors system, you know, maybe you have six or seven that are swings. And there can be guys that are pretty high value, but then there are guys that are just going to, you know, get you 2 points that night, 1 point, whatever, something that's going to slowly pad the stats. You know, the last third can be really kind of useful. You got to watch their games played too, because I'm on the hook for Nico Sturm now. He graduated, so he's on my team. So he's not a swing anymore, and now he's my player. I got to buy him out or trade him or drop him or whatever. But, you know, if you have free minor drops, it makes things a little more interesting, because you can always pick up the next, you know, somebody that with less games played. Or there are leagues. I was in a league with Zeb before the season starts. You have to decide whether or not you're graduating somebody. So there was no swings in that league. So there's different things out there, but I think it's important to have both. Everybody wants quality, but when you can't do that, quantity also helps a little bit too. So this next question was my favorite. Who is an under 25 defenseman that we should buy this off season? I don't know if it's based on, you know, value. I assume it's based on value. Like, you know, you can buy for cheap and is going to, you know, huge dividends, that kind of thing. I have a couple expensive players in here, but I want to know who you guys like.
Well, I mean, I don't really understand, like, if you meant, like, if we should buy their performance or people he wanted to go out and buy.
Yeah, like, who should you trade for?
Man, there's a lot of great under 25 D these days. Like, way, like, they didn't even get playing time 10 years ago, and there's a bunch. Other than the obvious, you know, the McCars and
Nikhil McCarr, yeah.
And the guys we've been talking about for a couple of years, one guy I'm actually quite hopeful for, but is a risk, is Noah Dobson.
Yep, I got him here too.
He's not going to approach, like, the point totals of, like, McCarr or Adam Fox, I don't think, but he's really good. And I think if the Islanders trend in the direction I think they're going to, which is to score a bit more, I think he's going to be a part of it.
Tell me this doesn't sound like a Mad Lib. 51 points as a defenseman on the island under Trotz. That just sounds like a made-up sentence, but it's happening. Yeah. It is. And, like, you know, maybe Lane Lambert does something that's different. He's been with Trotz for a long time, so I don't know. Maybe he could open up some offense, but 51 points in a defensive system under Trotz, that's a great start, and he's not going to be as expensive as a Kale McCarr. So I like that one. Zach, you got anybody?
Look at Bowen Byram. I think he came out a little bit this year, especially towards the end of the year. He was a big part of that cup run. And I think he really flies under the radar, obviously having Kale McCarr on his team. And then I want to throw this guy in here. I know he's 25, but Oliver Shillington, I know you're looking for under 25, but I love Oliver Shillington. And I think that he's going to take a bigger role next year in Calgary. He can bring the offensive side to that Calgary D.
I mean, anybody on that Calgary D, I think Hanifin, how old is Hanifin? Hanifin's 25, and Anderson, 25.
Yeah, they're a generally young defensive core. Yes, absolutely.
So just as a side note, like, are we kind of over Valimaki?
Yeah.
I think so, too. I've always liked Oliver Shillington.
So we talked about Dobson here. I got two that I really like. Zach Werenski, you know, super under the radar, 58-point pace. You probably would not have believed it. You know, I wouldn't have believed it if I didn't look it up. But, you know, if you're in a cap league, that's going to be hard to swallow. But I think he's going to be points for years. Evan Bouchard, he's going to be expensive. We talked about him, you know, a lot this season. I think he's going to be huge value in redrafts. But here in Dynasty, he's going to be just as expensive. You know, he could be quarterback one going into next year. And that would be huge. Absolutely huge. And then I have a list of guys here that I didn't really go into, but just name dropping. Guys like Caitlin Adamson, you know, could be taking power play reps as soon as next year. Cam York, unless the Flyers get Yurecek, I think Cam York could be the power play QB for a while. Jacob Chychrun, you know, maybe somebody doesn't like that whole Arizona taste that diluted his value a little bit. Scott Perunovich was seeing top power play time while Krug was out. Gustav Forsling, he's 26, but, like, you know, that's really good depth. Sean Dursey, Jordan Spence out of LA, Travis Sanheim could be a good short-term play. Keandre Miller, man, I know we all like this guy. He's going to be a household name when it comes to bangers. And, you know, he's a perfect guy to close out this list that I got. All right. Is it crazy to punt all your future talent for a win now strategy at all the time is the question. All the time. So just continually, like the Pittsburgh model, right? Like just sell everybody just to win now.
Yes.
You say it's crazy?
To do it all the time. And I think it's crazy. I think you always have to leave the back door unlocked. I need an out. I like to sit facing the entrance at a restaurant. All right. I like to see my exits. All right. And the same goes for a dynasty strategy. No, I'm not going all in either way.
I think it's important to be smart about who you're buying. Nobody is saying that like you have to go out and buy Joe Thornton or, exactly. You know, these guys that have 1 year left. Right. So I'm in three dynasties, two of which I sold everything in the last like month and a half, sold everything. In one league, like I picked up a starting goalie. That's a 20 team dynasty. So starting goalies are expensive. I bought Batherson.
Me too.
Batherson's going to be really good for a long time. So that's important. And I think I bought Victor Hedman. So like, you know, you buy good players who are going to be good for a while. And another league, the 32 team dynasty league, which is maybe the hardest league I've ever played in. I bought Ovechkin. I bought Jack Eichel. I bought players that are going to hopefully keep me competitive for a long time. Who else did I buy on that team? I bought Ovi. I bought Nishushkin. I bought Tarasenko. I'm still looking for a defenseman. So if anybody out there is in GDL and wants to sell me a defenseman, I still have like two prospects left. I have no picks. I bought Duclair. Like guys that, you know, I think I got 2 or 3 years left out of.
Did you hear about Duclair?
He's out for, I think it was like a month.
It's his Achilles, yeah.
Achilles, yeah.
They didn't say too long, like he might be back, but that one tends to linger if you're not careful, so hopefully he's okay.
I think the point of every year is to win. So if you can win, go do it. You can go for the slow burn and form a true dynasty by way of, you know, getting a solid group of young talent, waiting it out, and then, you know, that gives you a chance to own 5 years. But again, nobody's telling you to sell Cole Caulfield for Joe Thornton here. So you make a push, trade for smart players, and then you warp through that waiting phase. You know, you put yourself right into contention instead of waiting on these guys.
Yeah, I quit a few dynasties this year so I could focus on three. Because I think I was up to like five or six. I wanted to get more into it. And I, on one of my teams, I did that over the past week. I basically sold off my next 4 years, but I also sold off all my old guys. So I have right now, I have a really competitive team between like 23 to 27 year old players on one team. And it's going to be win now, but then the strategy is to not sell picks in the next couple of years. Like, you do have to plan it out so your players line up. You don't want to have like one great player and then in a few years you have one great player and then in a few years you have one great player. Like, you have to make sure it lines up. Otherwise you're just, you know, where Minnesota's been for the past 20 years of just like bubble team.
Yep. Then you're in the middle, you're not winning anything and you're not getting a good pick. All right, we got two questions left. This next one is it's an ethics question. We got Connor Bedard next year. We got Mishkov. We got Fantilli. Top three looks really enticing. So a lot of people are going to be tanking this year. From a commissioner's standpoint, how would you attempt to keep the league integrity in check if multiple teams begin to tank? And for me, I think as long as your lineups are set,
totally,
there's no big deal. I think, you know, if somebody's like ghosting their lineups, I think what I would do in this instance, you remember Arizona cheated at the combine and they lost their first round pick?
Yep.
Do that. You know, 25% of your rosters are not set, then you don't have a first round pick. We will skip you. And, you know, you could do something like that.
Even Fantrax now has the one button, set your lineups. So if you can't be bothered to set your lineups now, at least like 80, 90% of the time, like, you just shouldn't be in the league anyways. And that's a definite tank. Like, but the one thing that, I don't know if it was just in the wording there, but a particular word they said in there was if a couple teams start tanking, you need to deal with it right now. Like, don't wait until it happens and then try to scramble. And but you didn't tell us we couldn't tank so that people can tank, right? So I think you got to say something now. You could just say, because it's such a crazy year, it's a full-on lottery. But I like what you said, or just set a minimum games played limit and just tell everyone to monitor that lineups are being set.
Yeah, I think it's important to stay on top of it and, you know, like you said, nip it in the bud before it creates a problem. Last question we got is from our buddy Joe. It's about taking over a team, coming into a dynasty that's already established. Maybe you don't have first round picks. How would you go about coming into a new league? There's a lot of questions that kind of like spur off of this one. Like, how do you evaluate trades for this certain league? Maybe go through the transaction history, see what values are there. How do you go about, like, when you take over a team that's not set up for a rebuild and it's maybe not, the strongest? There's a reason that team's not owned, right? So like, you're coming into probably a mess, but like, what would you do coming into a new league? And how would you evaluate your team and what direction you're going to go in?
Well, obviously, I think that you have to start by analyzing your team, figuring out what your team is going to be doing. Are you going to be going right into a rebuild? Are you going to be trying to go for something? Because that does happen too. Not every team that people just randomly pick up is bad. Sometimes people just can't do it anymore. And, you know, you could get lucky. And, you know, we've had teams where, hey, man, you're the new person on the block. You actually got McDavid on your team. Like, that's just, you got lucky. You had the best player in the league. There you go. So it's not always all bad.
Yeah, there's certain instances like that where you're almost, your hand is forced. You have to compete. If you have McDavid, like, you make win now moves.
So number one, it's evaluate your team. And then number two, I think a big part of it, I think it's good to make trades. You can get a feel for people. And just because you're offering trades and talking to people doesn't mean that you have to do it. There are going to be people that if you're the new guy on the block, they might try to take advantage of you. Get a lay of the land. That's why I say, you know, at least offer some trades, kick some tires. The worst people can say is no, or, you know, try to screw you and then you just don't do it. There's nothing saying you have to say yes. But kicking the tires and seeing what kind of league you're in, that's a good way to, you know, kind of kick things off, I think.
Yeah, I took over a team not too long ago. You know, it was kind of a middle team, like good prospects, good team. It wasn't set up for a rebuild and it wasn't set to win. There are teams in this league that were dominant. There are teams like this guy that has every good prospect. So it was like, it didn't make sense to be a builder because it's just, how do you compete with a guy that has nothing but blue chips? So I went out into the team chat and I was like, listen, like, I don't know what my team's going to do. Somebody send me a trade that makes sense and that will determine what direction I go into. Like, if you want my prospects, offer me something that makes sense. If you want my win now pieces, offer me something that makes sense. And I will feel out what direction I want to go based on what trades make sense for me. And it was important for me to like kind of give it a couple days. Like, this was a league where trades happen every day. It's a very trade-heavy team, very active. It's fun. Like, I have Igor Afanasyev left. That's like the only prospect I have left on this team. So I'm not making much more moves. I wound up, I sold like all my picks plus five really good prospects for a package of starting goalie Gibson, Hedman, and Batherson. And like, I think maybe one other piece, I forget. But that was the thing that was like, okay, I'm win now. But yeah, I think it's important to see other people trade, see what the values are. Don't let people take advantage of you. Don't take advantage of the new guy. I think that's an important integrity ethics thing to shout out there. And just kind of marinate for a little bit. And I think what I did, you know, it made my decision for me. I said, I've got prospects. I've got win now pieces. You guys decide for me what direction I'm going to go in. Send me something that makes sense for me.
In our world, the Discord is huge, right? Like every dynasty league tends to have some sort of dynasty chat, whether it's through Discord or Facebook Messenger or whatever your league uses. I love the Discord platform. That seems to be where most people do. But start talking to people and you get a good idea. Like if you are in a league with a bunch of Canucks idiots, like start looking to shop JT Miller right now. Start trying to, you know, just but get involved and get a lay of the land because The other thing I would do is, you know, really identify your key pieces and don't be afraid to move them. But like, if you're a shitty team, the bottom half of your roster doesn't matter. If anybody wants anybody, do a lot of stack trades and try to do a lot of 3 or 2 for 1 plus picks. Just build some assets of some kind. If it's just a dump team, then have a direction. Don't like try to have a bunch of prospects and a bunch of great players and a bunch of veterans. You are not going to be able to do that. Like, pick a direction and go pretty hard.
What Zach was saying about evaluate your own team, I think it's also important to evaluate the rest of the league. Like, I noticed that this other team had all of the good prospects, and it was like, you know, why would I rebuild when that's the guy I would have to compete with based on that window? So get a feel for your league too. Like, can you compete? Are the teams at the top way too stacked, or are the teams at the bottom, like, are they primed to make a heavy impact in 5 years? So find your window and make plans around that. I think this league specifically that Joe was talking about, he kind of inherited a team that wasn't set to win now, and they didn't have many picks. So I think that's a perfect time to like just let time take its course. Maybe you get a few, with that time, you're getting a better feel for the league too, so you can make more informed trades. But at the same time, you got time. You know, you don't need to win right now. If it's a money league, yeah, you probably want to win. You're not going to pay $50 year over year just to have prospects. So figure it out. I think, you know, find out where your window could possibly fit, where the least condensed area of windows is. Because if everybody's window is 5 years from now, you're going to have a hell of a time. Maybe win now is the time to go. So, you know, it's important to get a total scan of your league. All right. So that's it for the Dynasty Mailbag. Thank you, everybody, who submitted questions. This was actually a lot of fun, like stretching the brain muscles like that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Good times. Next episode, we're going to be doing a Fantasy GM's toolbox and traits. We're going to be talking about how we evaluate players based on certain scenarios. Like, I think we talked about like breakout and busts would be a fun one to dissect. Unsustainable, sustainable. Rog, you got a couple ideas that deal with the draft that are going to be fun. And we're going to take you through how we evaluate players and form our decisions and what resources we use, both online and, you know, the Discord or whatever. How do we come to our conclusions? So that'll be a fun kind of peek behind the curtain episode. So, look forward to that one. I know I am. Happy 4th of July to our American listeners. Happy Independence, whatever the fuck you guys do in Canada. What do you guys do?
Canada Day.
Canada Day. There you go.
July 1st.
Do your Canada things. That'll be fun.
What do you guys do for Canada Day? Do you like grill out and have, you know, hot dogs and hamburgers or what?
If you took the 4th of July and made it Canadian, that's what it is. Just way more subdued. Not as much going on, but it's pretty cool.
What kind of hot dogs do you have good hot dogs? I hope so. I would expect Canada to have a solid hot dog.
Sabrats, baby. I'm a Sabrats guy.
I go to a British butcher up the street, so I get a lot of good fresh meat from there. But I'm a big sauerkraut and smoky guy on the grill.
Oh, Zach too, yeah.
Yeah, I love me some sauerkraut with a brat or a hot dog, some spicy brown.
Yeah.
Oh man, I fuck with some spicy brown mustard hard.
I don't know if anybody but New Jersey does this, but I lived in New Jersey till I was 8, but they had these trucks and we just called them the dirty water dogs. Those fucking hot dogs, man, they are the best.
Yeah.
They're just sitting in like this friggin' hot dog stock.
Yeah, hot dog water. They're just sitting in a hot dog water.
Hot dog water. A stock, if you will. Man, those hot dogs were something else. I don't know if they do them anymore, but man, they were good. But that's it for us tonight, guys. You can find us on Twitter at FHF Hockey. You can hop in the Fantasy Hockey Discord. We'd love to have you. Until next time, we love yous.
Love you.
Love you.